The USDA ushered out its monthly world grain supply and demand numbers yesterday. We'll talk about them now with Dan O'Brien on his weekly grain market segment. He is a grain market economist with K-State Research and Extension. And the real attention getter, at least in these parts, Dan, the winter wheat seedings number from the USDA. Nationally, if this holds, this would be the lowest acreage planted to winter wheat in over 100 years in this country.
Well, there's certainly an explanation for it. With low prices at or below loan rates in a lot of Kansas, we've seen some strength of late, of course, but for the last several months, we've been having extremely low prices, problems moving wheat through export channels, you know, our normal means of clearing out issues, storage issues at almost every local elevator that has a predominant amount of wheat production around them. So,
plenty of disincentives, aren't there?
Plenty of disincentives, and furthermore, the rumblings of the U.S. Federal Reserve raising the value of the dollar, giving us even more of a challenge in terms of moving U.S. wheat. Farmers voted with their planters, and so the first crop they really had the chance to go into the field and make a choice on as we moved through the fall of 2016 was wheat, and they voted to not expose themselves to what they viewed to be a risky enterprise. Now, even though we have low acres, we could end up with great yields. Mm-hmm. We don't know how this year will come out, but as a first signal, you can see that there's a lot of concern about wheat prices and wheat profitability. And that's, of course, the number we're looking at is an overall winter wheat number for the U.S. Hard red winter wheat by itself was down to 23.3 million, down 12% from 2016. In Kansas, we projected to have seeded 7.4 million of those winter wheat acres. We're down 13% from the previous year and down almost 20% from 2 years ago. So some challenges there. I would say that low prices, given the signals they are at this time in terms of expected profitability, are leading us to cutbacks in production, which will eventually rebalance our supply-demand situation and lead us eventually to higher prices. But we're right in the crunch of it, I think, Eric, in terms of having those choices made and seeing how this is going to work its way through the next one or two or three years.
And, in fact, the market did respond to the upside following those wheat numbers. So maybe, one would hope anyway, this has given some impetus to a higher floor for this market.
Still out there, I think it's worth remembering that the USDA in their first projection for 2017-18 marketing year actually projected higher prices and not lower. And again, they were counting on some of these same factors being in play. Again, lower acreage, a return to trend line yields, so tighter stocks to use, and basically a move towards seeing market forces lead us towards higher prices. They projected, I think, $4 a bushel as opposed to $3.70. The USDA did, for this marketing year, raise their price figure up to $3.80, in a range of $3.75-$3.85 for the 2016-17 marketing year, again, one that will be running through May 31st. So anyway, even with stocks to use over 50%, there's some positive things happening nationally in the wheat market, and we've even seen some, as we've talked about, some modest improvement here of late, and we'll see where we go the rest of this year, but we've got kind of the old classic situation where we have really slow demand right now for the crop we have, but we see optimism price-wise based on anticipation of lower production, tighter stocks to use heading off into next year.
Well, other numbers from the report yesterday morning, Dan, and on both the corn and soybean fronts, ending stocks were lower than expected, especially on the part of soybeans.
Yeah, really thought-provoking as to how this all played out. So here you have the final numbers for corn production and soybean production in the U.S. and for ending stocks for both those crops on the balance sheets coming in lower than had been expected. Mixed in with that on corn coming out of this the stocks report was kind of a more modest signal of feed usage than what we had been expecting to see, and the corn balance sheet reflected that when the USDA pared back their feed and residual number about 50 million bushels. However, they did increase their ethanol number and ended up with an ending stock figure about 2.355 billion, still an awful lot of corn, stock to use closer to 16%, but it's down some, about 50, 60 million bushels from what we had coming out of the December report. And with that, we see the price anticipated for this year moving up just a little bit for corn. So really some positive news out of this for corn. And even with the large production numbers, we'd seen corn on yesterday's markets close at least sideways to marginally higher. So in the midst of what could have happened with a large negative report, no real change, we could have seen a lot worse situation than we came out with based on the market's reaction to that. On the bean side, again, instead of having a 4.4 or 4.5 billion bushel soybean crop number come out of yesterday's report, or something close to 4.4, here we ended up something close to 4.3, and just that much differential tipped things to the positive. We saw the markets moved 27, 29 cents higher yesterday on the futures. So I guess we'll take that positive signal. And but when you do see the supply-demand balance sheet figure, I think that the big attention getter was that lower production number worked its way right through an unchanged set of usage numbers and was reflected in about 60 million bushels less of projected ending stocks. Prices moved about a nickel higher. Stocks used is projected to close at about 10% or slightly over 10% instead of just under 12. And, you know, that makes a difference. And of course, we see how the futures market responded to that yesterday in the soybeans.
And you say, Dan, that you discovered that hidden over in a far corner of this massive report, a tidbit on demand for grain sorghum, where ethanol usage of sorghum is on the upside.
Yes, this sorghum supply-demand balance sheet probably fared worse than other crops coming out of this report. And in particular, the USDA's projection of prices, they lowered the price down to 290 per bushel as a projection, as opposed to the 310 they'd had previously, and also as opposed to the nickel raise that we'd seen for corn. But as you dig through that, there are a lot of things unchanged that still show expectations on the part of the USDA anyway of exports staying at about 250 million bushels, which would be a good healthy number. The surprise that's again hidden back within those numbers is that it seems like the USDA is anticipating ethanol usage of grain sorghum to increase at least 15, 20 million bushels thereabouts. Feed residual usage also up 15 million bushels. So lower prices for grain sorghum are spurring on demand, and eventually that ends up with a pretty good result, although right now in the middle of it, mainly we see the low prices. So we're building a demand base, I guess. If you're an optimist, you'll say we're building a demand base for grain sorghum in the domestic and international markets. But we just have to get through a large, oversupplied feed grain market at this time to be able to see light at the end of the tunnel for grain sorghum as we move off into 2017.
Well, you note as well that with this fresh set of grain supply and demand numbers in pocket now, looming on the sidelines, but not to be ignored, the latest long-range weather outlook, which suggests that drought conditions could really start to take hold in a fair part of grain production territory in this country, and that could well weigh in eventually.
You know, Eric, how much do we put ourselves at risk to rattling our saber about how people should be worried about drought problems and be accused of trying to run the market higher, you know? But I would say, just trying to be objective about it, the U.S. Drought Monitor map that was formulated on January the 10th shows dry conditions throughout almost all of Kansas, worse off in the western part, dry conditions developing in Missouri, of course, southeast U.S., challenges there. Oklahoma's got real problems. The long-term moisture projections into February and April show a pretty dry area coming from, again, Oklahoma, Arkansas, up through Missouri, into the southern two-thirds of Illinois, all of Indiana, parts of Ohio. Of course, western Kansas is part of that. So we certainly don't want to just be rumor mongers and to try to talk the markets higher because of risk. But that said, there is risk out there. And I guess we'll just have to see where we find ourselves about March, April, May, and if these type of projections and patterns hold true, then we'd have lots of dry weather to plant into, but questions about how much moisture we'll have to bring crops to full fruition again in 2017, as we've seen about the last 3 years in a row.
All right, then. And we'd remind our listeners out there that if they'd like to see a full account of Dan's analysis of the USDA World Agricultural Supply and Demand Report from yesterday, take a look at that now at agmanager.info, agmanager.info. Thanks for the insight, Dan. We'll get together again next Friday.
Thanks, Eric. Take care.
He joins us weekly, does Dan O'Brien, grain market economist, K-State Research and Extension.